Rise with me and join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Ms. Ledeschewski?
Here.
Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis?
Here.
Ms. Scheinberg?
Here.
Ms. Troll?
Here.
Ms. White?
Here.
Mayor Becker?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. So, our first item on the agenda is a special order of business. It's to introduce Dallas Hargrave. And
he's not here.
Oh,
no. Oh, really?
Already taking a night off, huh?
He should be here momentarily. But we also have somebody else we'd like to introduce that's not on the agenda, and I will turn that over to Amy Mead.
I just wanted to introduce you, Trinidad Contreras, who's our newest municipal attorney.
Good. Thank you. Welcome.
And that gave us plenty of time for Dallas Hargrave to walk in. He's our HRRM. Dallas, you want to wave so everybody knows who you are?
Okay.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks for being here, both of you. And welcome, welcome, welcome. The next thing is a proclamation for National Engineers Week. And I believe that Representative Sam Keto is here to accept this proclamation. Am I right? You can have everyone come up if you want to. Is there someone else? Okay, good. Thank you. So this is a proclamation for National Engineers Week. Whereas February 21 to 27, 2016 has been designated as National Engineers Week, and whereas the 2016 theme, Engineers Make a World of Difference, spotlights the opportunity engineers provide in making the world a better place, and whereas National Engineers Week is celebrated during the week of George Washington's birthday to honor the contributions President Washington, a military engineer and land surveyor, made to engineering, and whereas Southeast Alaska engineers have enhanced the quality of life in Juneau and the Southeast community through public works projects and port and harbors development, and maritime transportation, mining, and improvements to airports, museums, recreation facilities, roadways, schools, and telecommunications. That was a mouthful there. And whereas the Juneau branch of the American Society of Civil Engineers and Alaska Capital Engineers are local sponsors of National Engineers Week, celebrating the local accomplishment of Projects of the Year and Engineer of the Year recognitions within the Juneau region, and whereas since 1983, the National Society of Professional Engineers has contributed time, sponsorship, and resources in support of the National Math Counts Competition Series, a competitive mathematics program that promotes mathematical achievements through a series of fun and engaging B-style contests. And whereas the 2016 Juneau Math Counts competition will be held on February 13, 2016 at Juneau Douglas High School. And whereas the Juneau branch of the American Society of Civil Engineers is engaging in hands-on school outreach programs in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics during National Engineers Week to inspire future generations of engineers and scientists. And whereas the Juneau branch has established civil engineer and professional engineer scholarships for high school seniors pursuing Bachelor of Science degrees in the engineering and science fields. Now, therefore, I, Mary Becker, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby proclaim February 21 to 27, 2016, as National Engineers Week in Juneau, Alaska, and call upon the people of Juneau to recognize the essential contributions engineers make within our community. In witness whereof, I have hereto set my hand and caused the seal of the City and Borough of Juneau to be affixed this 8th day of February 2016. Please come up. Yes. Would you like to say anything?
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you.
And I've got Gerald Weatherall here also with the Alaska Society of Professional Engineers. Thank you, Madam Mayor, Assembly. This is actually a great, exciting thing that happens every year. We have people that go out into the schools, engineers in the community.
We have people that go out into the schools, engineers in the community, to talk to students in our schools. We have events all week, and then we have a banquet at the end of Engineers Week, and it's a really great opportunity for engineers to showcase and be showcased as far as our contribution to the infrastructure in Southeast, but all over the world. So thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the Assembly, and have a good evening. Daryl?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next agenda item is approval of the minutes, and we certainly want the public to be impressed with the 7 meetings we have had. So, December 21, regular assembly meeting. Are there any corrections or additions? Yes, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just to point out, the committee reports appear twice on pages 12 and 13, and so if those could be eliminated once, that would be a little clearer when reading.
Mr. Vancovers, that was the same thing?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yes, it was.
Okay. With that correction, are these minutes approved? Is there any objection? Okay. January 11, special assembly meeting. Are there any corrections or additions? Is there any objection to approving those minutes? Okay, they are approved. January 11, regular assembly meeting. Are there any corrections or additions? Is there any objection to approving those minutes? Okay, they are approved. January 12, special assembly meeting. Are there any corrections or additions to those minutes? Okay, those minutes are approved then. January 19, special assembly meeting. Are there any corrections or additions to those minutes? Okay, those minutes are approved. January 25, special assembly meeting. Any corrections or additions to those minutes? Okay, then those minutes are also approved. February 1st, 2016, special assembly meeting. Are there any corrections or additions to those minutes? Okay, then those minutes are also approved. Thank you. Okay, Madam Manager, are there any agenda changes?
There's a clarification on page 168 of your packet, 168 of 308. Exhibit A, Resolution 2740, under item number 6, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th line down, claim is struck out of this, but it really shouldn't be, so claim should not have a strike through on it. In the information that we provided explaining the changes, it was correct in the explanation, it just didn't get caught in the change.
So it should be.
So it should be.
Yes.
Claim shouldn't be struck through. So it should read, upon arrival in Juneau, the employee may continue to claim per diem for lodging.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Public participation on non-agenda items. Is there anyone in the public who would like to address the assembly on a non-agenda item? Come up. Both of you, one at a time there. Please state your name and address for the record.
Three minutes? What do I got?
30 seconds.
That's good.
3 minutes would be nice. Oh, we have a number of people. Okay. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mayor Becker and Assembly members. My name is Ron Somerville, and I'm here to kind of keep you advised of what's happening somewhat in your community. I live at 4506 Robbie Road. I'm a lifelong resident of Alaska and a resident of Juneau since 1979. This is my personal testimony only and does not reflect the opinions of any group or organization. I'm taking this opportunity to advise the Assembly what my family is doing to make up for the increase in taxes that you imposed in our family starting January 1, 2016. We're also examining the potential impacts of the proposed state solutions to the existing fiscal crisis, which include numerous tax increases, partial or total loss of permanent fund dividends, and a statewide sales tax. We are using Amazon Prime wherever possible to save on the retail price of goods and the lack of a sales tax. We no longer contribute to local fundraising efforts such as local sports, nonprofits, the arts, or other community charities. We have reduced our volunteer efforts to only programs that emphasize statewide issues. We're helping in creating a website to highlight local businesses that give discounts to seniors and veterans. We are participating in the process of creating a network for monitoring potential legislative actions which may target seniors, such as proposed changes to the present property tax exemption for seniors. For fiscal purposes, we're utilizing the access to other community businesses where prices are competitive and there are no sales taxes such as Anchorage or Seattle. I noticed that one Assembly member responded to a senior citizen email by indicating that Juneau seniors were directing their revenge at the wrong people. This clearly indicates how little that Assembly member was listening to the testimony of most senior Juneau seniors. This response by seniors is not revenge. It is about recouping the money the Assembly took from us. I estimate my savings on gas alone for my changes in volunteerism is about $500 to $600 a year, primarily because my truck uses lots of gas. The Assembly was advised that these personal changes would occur, but they chose to ignore the testimony. Well, I respect that. If they want the same level of community activity in the future, however, you're going to now have to pay for it. There is one area where seniors are going to be more visible, and that is on issues like where the Assembly gets and spends its money. By the way, most seniors I know don't agree, for instance, with creating an island and channel to house the bronze whale. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Summerfield. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Lindrum?
Madam Mayor, Assembly members, my name is David Lindrum. I'm at 11029 Mendenhall Loop Road. In the last couple of Assembly meetings, I've had a lot of questions raised about our adhering to the criteria and conditions of our use permit. And we've been vigorously following all the criteria and conditions of our use permit. We've been inspected and we've been approved, including the small section of our driveway. That's 22 and a half feet rather than 24 feet. That's been judged substantially compliant. We were upheld at the Planning Commission and at the appeal to the Assembly and at the Superior Court, and the new case coming to the Supreme Court, I'm confident will also follow the same process. There was an episode referred to where a truck slid down an icy driveway. This is not a Landscape Alaska occurrence. This was a Christmas present. It was a delivery by AML. I told them I'd come and pick it up at the terminal, but they chose to deliver it instead. And as you probably know, AML no longer uses small trucks. Every delivery done around town is done with a cab and box truck. This is one of the reasons why we have another site for doing our industrial work. We could bring the trucks there. Anything that comes to the Landscape Alaska site comes and leaves in smaller vehicles so it can manage on the driveway. Just because someone doesn't understand or like or follow the logical zoning regulations does not mean those regulations are not being upheld. CBJ staff have been assiduous in instructing us, inspecting us, following us around, and clarifying anything. We've followed all their regulations. I came tonight because I just didn't want it to seem like we didn't pay any attention. I feel compelled to say that, yes, we've done what we're supposed to do. We've followed all the criteria, and we started out by following the law, and we still do so. And anytime you'd like to come and visit us, please do so. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Lundrum. Are there any questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mary Ellison, I believe your testimony is on an agenda item for public hearing, so we'll wait till then. Thank you. Is this Kay? Kay Bricks.
I'm the same. I'm also on the agenda.
All right. Thank you. I didn't see what... Oh. Larry Jackson on biosolids.
I'm not familiar with your guys' protocol here, but I'm out of town, and I just wanted to make a quick statement on that.
Please come here and give your name and address. And
yeah, it's Larry Jackson. I live in Ketchikan, 355 Carlisle Lake in Ketchikan. I have a small wood products company down there. We manufacture wood products out of the Tongass, and I understand you guys have a biosolids issue. We've been working on a concept, a prototype there for a wood pellet. We also manufacture wood pellets for heating. We heat three or four buildings in Ketchikan, do bulk manufacturing and delivery. And I've processed a biosolid composite wood pellet. This is part sewage sludge, part wood. The prototype I made was about 3/4 ton, and it's so 9-to-1 ratio. I bring it to you guys only as a community. I understand you have a biosolids problem. We do too. We ship ours south, and so this is partly a way to maybe find a solution to use our waste from manufacturing and our municipal human waste make a pellet and heat buildings with it. I've done that and sent out to labs on this. We're going to do a demonstration project where we burn this product in a dedicated boiler at our manufacturing site. So I just wanted to come here, and I happen to be in town for the Innovation Senate. Somebody said you guys are contemplating this issue, and I am aware of your municipal issue, and I think it may be a possible partial solution to your one of your problems here. So I just thought I'd come and say that.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Yes.
Yes. Ms. White?
Thank you, and I'm sorry, I forgot to write down your name.
Larry Jackson.
Okay, Mr. Jackson. So you have a like a lumber mill or something?
Well, yeah, so we're a wood products manufacturer. We have sawmill.
Okay.
Wood kilns, planers, and we manufactured the Dan Muller cabin. We've manufactured many cabins and different products, building materials primarily out of species from the Tongass. So in that process, we generate byproduct, planer shavings, wood chips. Mm-hmm. We use those products to then make a traditional wood pellet. We have a biomass dryer, a drum dryer. We dry our wood waste. We then make pellets, and then we sell those. We've taken biosolids from Ketchikan Press in the borough, combined it with our wood waste, and made a composite wood pellet
mm-hmm.
From biosolids and wood. We've burned it. We've tested it with a third-party lab that we send our wood pellet tests mm-hmm. to anyway, and it's a little bit lower BTUs. There are some production issues as far as the higher moisture content of biosolids, and there's some technical issues to work. But it makes a traditional pellet, and it burns and handles like a wood pellet.
Mm-hmm. Wood. Okay. So my main question was where you got the wood products. Mm-hmm. I would only wish I could use my wood lathe that much. So.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes,
Ms. Steinberg. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Jackson, I was wondering, so if I understand the process correctly, if our biosludge goes through a dryer, you would take the product, you take the product after it comes from the dryer, combine it with wood waste, and that's what makes the pellet. It's not instead of a dryer, it's taking the product that the dryer produces.
Well, I kind of vaguely have followed your... And I'm not familiar with the agenda item or even the plan. I've only heard it kind of vaguely that you are contemplating a dryer, and there's lots of different dryers. We've taken actually just raw pressed septic solids. Biosolids is the EPA term, but whatever you want to call them, sludge. They've been partially dewatered. They're still 80% moisture. Wood is typically around 50%. And we're blending that, putting it through a drum dryer, which is heated by wood. And then that dried product then goes into a traditional wood pellet press.
Thank you.
So, I mean, we could take your guys's, I don't know the exact moisture content of your processed waste, but it could possibly be taken as is. As you ship it south currently, that's all we did from ours, is we just took it out of their container before it went to their container and blended it and dried it into a pellet.
Yes, Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I had an opportunity to hear Mr. Jackson's presentation at the Innovation Summit, and I think this could present some opportunities for us in the future. You know, we don't generate enough wood waste here to produce the type of pellet he's talking about, but as we've made our decision on the biosolids, the dryer, but in the future there's nothing to prevent us from maybe shipping some of our biosolids down to Ketchikan to mix with his wood waste, particularly as we move into more of a young growth timber harvest regime. We're likely to see a lot more of those bio wood products being developed. So I thought it was an interesting proposal, and I think it presents an opportunity for us in the future.
Thank you.
One more.
Yes, Ms. White.
I mean, one more, Mr. Jack. So you said the laboratory is still testing this?
No,
to decide if you have to get that special EPA permit to burn it, or what?
Well, no, so there's two different things. We did a lab test, a traditional wood pellet fuel analysis test, which just tests for BTU content, ash content, chlorine, and some basic 10 characteristics of it, of a wood pellet. You know, in that protocol, the Pellet Fuels Institute, it met basically a premium pellet. We didn't test it for emissions in the terms of an EPA emissions. We just did this typical fuel analysis test on it. Part of the idea of doing a dedicated demonstration boiler would be able to burn it consistently in a boiler and see how it performed over a long length of time, take maybe some of the production. Part of my concept, and this is fluid here, is, hey, take a portion of your guys' possible waste, blend it at our facility, and try different blends. Different communities have different process, so their waste ends up at different states, either dried or, like in Ketchikan, we have two different presses, and they actually end up in different moisture content. So would be to take different waste from different communities and see if we can come up with a good blend that was cost effective, because it does slow down our drying process or our pelletizing process. But so we haven't done an EPA test, but I think we would take it in a class 2 biosolid form. That would be our goal.
Thank you
okay,
very much.
Thank you.
Welcome to Juneau. Mr. Hiltner, I believe you are on your item is on one of the public. It's on our agenda. So the three of you stay together, then I'll remember. Okay. Thank you. All right. Public testimony is closed. We're ready to discuss the consent agenda. Mr. Keel. Are there any consent agenda changes?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead, Mr. Keel. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would like to request that resolution 2740 be pulled from the consent agenda.
Personnel rules.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. Is there anyone in the public who wants to pull something from the agenda, the consent agenda, other than an ordinance for introduction? Should have asked that. Okay. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move the consent agenda with the exception of resolution 2740 and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Okay. The consent agenda is passed with that removal. We are now We're now going to take up, if I can find where it is, the resolution 2740. Mr. Jones.
Thank you. I think you can read what the city manager wrote.
Here it is.
I didn't get a chance to read it in its entirety. I read significant portions of it. The reason for my objection was I had basically asked our assistant deputy city manager some questions that she dutifully answered related to sort of what kind of work group worked on this, how extensive it was, whether the unions were involved, whether the airport or Bartlett was involved. The answers I got back was there was significant staff involvement, enterprise board involvement. These personnel rules do not apply to Bartlett. Bartlett's rules are being rewritten, and they will go back to the Bartlett board. While there hadn't been any union comments to any of these, there was some agreement to one of the sections that sort of changed the interpretation related to some of these. So I was pretty satisfied with that, but it still struck me that in a nonprofit world, if you're doing personnel management or you're doing any kind of policies and procedures, pretty lengthy committee process. If you're doing an accreditation, that accreditation wants to see the documentation of how the board was involved, did the board able to offer any changes, and to have something that's 100 pages or more through a consent agenda that deals with the personnel rules for city employees, I find difficult to approve. But because I haven't been able to read it in depth, and I got answers back, which I was hoping to hear, and I learned something from those answers, I don't really want to object this time to the resolution. I just wanted to get on the record that I think there ought to be some other way in which somehow a committee of the assembly, this committee of the whole, human resources, whatever, gets a chance to look at these before they suddenly show up on a consent agenda at 100-plus pages. I know that Ms. Cosgrove has offered to answer our questions, an email a couple weeks ago, but as you can tell by the number of minutes we passed and some of the issues we faced, I just didn't have time to read it. So I just wanted to get that on the record, and with that, I would remove any my objections to this approval. I don't know if there's any others, but
thank you. Are there any other objections? Can we have a motion to approve this particular withdrawal? Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Madam Mayor, I would move that the Assembly approve Resolution 2740, a resolution adopting revisions to the City and Borough of Juneau Personnel Rules, and would ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Okay, that is approved. We are now ready to go into public hearing. The first item on our public hearing is Ms. Clerk.
Madam Clerk. Ordinance 2016-02B, an ordinance amending the nuisance code relating to the manufacturing of marijuana concentrate and providing for a penalty.
Thank you, Madam Manager.
Yes, this ordinance would amend Title 36, the nuisance code, to make it a violation to manufacture marijuana concentrates using anything other than water-based or food-based extraction methods. You'll notice in the manager's report that we had residential areas still in there that has been taken out and was taken out at the Committee of the Whole meeting on February 1st. The Committee of the Whole approved an amendment making it applicable to all zones, and that change is reflected in version B of this ordinance. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify besides the three of you would like to still? Okay. I didn't know if that clarified something you wanted to talk about. Okay, Mary Ellison.
There's four.
Oh, where's the fourth?
Nicole.
Thank you, Ms. Ellison.
Can you hear me? My name is Mary Ellison, and I live at 8170 North Douglas in a D1 residential area where commercial cultivation of marijuana is now in the process of being permitted. I encourage you strongly to adopt this ordinance and all others that protect the security and health of all Juneau neighbors equally. Further, I respectfully request that as you adopt safety measures around personal use, you extend this to prohibit the use of explosive manufacturing methods in commercial farms in D1 and RR neighborhoods. I thank Mr. Steedle and Mr. Keel for responding to my concerns while the Planning Commission, the Assembly, and the staff sort through policies, ordinances, permitting, and licensing within the stress of a timeline. However, I want to remind you that your controversial decision to allow commercial cultivation in D1 and RR neighborhoods is still controversial. Please ensure that each step you take, from personal use to commercial to industrial farming, provides equal protections for all of our citizens. As a borough, it is our issue to manage. As a community, let us own the safest and smartest way forward. I remember working with then Assembly Member Jim Powell in the 90s, advocating for a neighborhood plan for North Douglas. It's still the first recommendation for our sub-area in the CBJ comp plan. Over 20 years ago, I didn't imagine sitting here tonight asking for safeguards for personal marijuana to be extended to commercial cultivation. Recent descriptions cited by city officials for non-food or water-based extraction methods include volatile and fire hazard and concern for public safety. These terms just don't fit together with my vision for my residential neighborhood. Thank you for all your work on this issue. It's confusing and complicated and unprecedented.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you very much. Kay Ricks.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Assembly Members. My name is Kaya Bricks, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. I'd just like to also thank Mr. Keel and Mr. Steedle and Ms. Stedman for their thoughtful responses to comments that I have sent in on this issue. And I would also like to say that I applaud your efforts to consider the impacts of allowing volatile compounds in the manufacture of marijuana in our neighborhoods. It seems straightforward to recognize the potential hazards. I urge you to prohibit the use of flammables for personal use marijuana production. The action you're taking tonight is, however, but one piece of a much bigger picture. Lest we recklessly plunge into piecemeal regulation of an entirely new commercial venture, I hope that you will consider this the entire suite of ordinances necessary for responsible community action. Marijuana production, or for that matter, any commercial venture, must be balanced with the very real concern for resident safety, security, neighborhood quality, and land use. We're all in this together, and we're all accountable for good decision making. We're all accountable for protecting the quality and nature of our residential neighborhoods. But please don't just stop here. Please act in a comprehensive way to enact sound ordinances for all marijuana operations. I know you've already considered community input. I guess I would suggest that you consider more. I think it's easy to focus on comment to a concept or to the hypothetical. I think it's much more difficult to focus on details. And I urge you to consider the community's input. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there questions? Yes, Mr. Jones.
Thank you. You are aware that the state has a set of regulations that have now been approved that will address chemicals or what can be used for the manufacture of marijuana products, to take the agricultural product and make edibles or tinctures, and all of the things in there that they require the city and borough to look at through a conditional use permit, and also what the state marijuana control board will look at in terms of what kind of processes are prohibited, what are allowed, the required fire inspections, or those kind of requirements. You're familiar with all of those.
I'm probably not as familiar as you are, but I am aware, yes.
Okay, because, you know, to duplicate those at a local level, if they're required as part of a state permit and a state license, you know, I think the local marijuana committee looked at that, tried to make some decisions. And so a lot of what, you know, your testimony and the other letters that we have received have been talking about that, of a lot of issues that are already prohibited at the, through the state regulations. So I just, you know, want you to be aware of those.
Yes, I am. Thank you. I guess my comment is really just about the local application and how you all choose as elected officials to implement that in our residential communities.
Okay. Are there other questions? No. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Hiltner.
Hi, Fred Hiltner, 9601 North Douglas Highway. And I'm gonna just had time to scribble some notes down, so I'm gonna suffer more than you are if I tangle myself up here. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify. I very much appreciate your responsibility to make decisions for Juneau that hopefully will maintain the public safety and integrity and character of our neighborhoods. I just learned about the permit that permits were available to allow commercial farming in the D1 zone neighborhoods, including where I live in North Douglas, that would change the neighborhoods, change the nature of the neighborhoods significantly. Likely, commercial growing of marijuana will compromise our safety, lower our property values, increase noise significantly, allow grow lights lighting up the skies and chemicals to go into the water, leak down into Gastineau Channel where many thousands of salmon spawn every summer. Just because marijuana is now legal, we don't need to compromise our rural neighborhoods. I can just imagine a marijuana farm on each side of our quiet home on North Douglas. Grow lights on all night, 24-hour fans keeping us up, vehicles coming and going at all hours. Apparently now maximum growing space, so we could have, you know, farms right up to our property lines. I know that we can support commercial growing of marijuana in Juneau, but let's restrict it to industrial areas because that's what this will be, industry. The owls are passing through our neighborhood this week. We're hearing the hoots and calls of great horned owls and northern screech owls this week. Owls we likely would not hear more if we are flanked by commercial pot growers. Please think carefully, thoughtfully, and take the necessary time to make decisions that will enhance our and not negatively affect our neighborhoods. Please take any and all steps necessary to deny permits in D1 neighborhoods and move them to industrial areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mr. Hiltner, thank you. I appreciate your comments.
Sure.
I appreciate what you're talking about. I'm not sure I heard comments specific to this ordinance, which is specifically about people who are not in the business, people who don't have a license or an inspection, making concentrates. So going from the plant to oils, waxes, keef.
Sure.
I learned a lot of new words in this process.
did
you have particular comments about this piece?
Not specifically
okay.
Now, no, but I guess I wanted to at least have you consider where it might be happening. I hope you really take a look at that because I really feel like it will change the nature of our neighborhood, Thane, Douglas, and those areas into perpetuity possibly. So whether it's the concentrates or warehouses, I just really hope that you'll consider that. Maybe what it would be like to have your house flanked by commercial growers too. So thank you.
Yes, there, Mr. Hiltner. Sorry, we have another question for you, Ms. Scheinberg.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Hiltner. I just wanted to clarify, make sure that you were aware that I believe it was in December an ordinance was passed and has been approved that amends the table of permissible uses and does say what type of cultivation is allowed where. And if you want to look that up, it's ordinance, it's 2015-39. You can find that on the website. And that, I think, explains some of the points that you brought up tonight.
Yeah, I was here, and I may be confused about it. It's been pretty complex to sort through, as it may have been for you also. And I was at that meeting, and I thought that it was denied to grow commercially in D1 neighborhoods. And then I understand now that there are permits that could be soon approved to grow that. So that may have been something. I guess I did misunderstand it, if that's, in fact, that's actually allowed now.
Ms. Kalaszewski?
I would just clarify, if you want, there's two lines for marijuana cultivation. And the one that's allowed in a D1 zone is 500 square feet, no more than 500 square feet in cultivation. So essentially, the size of a garage.
But can't you have more than one in a large lot in that situation also? More than one of those 500 square foot?
That it's all subject to a conditional use permit, so it all goes through the Planning Commission.
Right. Well, I would encourage you, and thank you for your time too. Move those into an industrial area for the sake of the neighborhoods. Thank you for your industrial area.
Thank you, Mr. Hiltner. Ms. Gruy?
First of all, thank you for letting me testify tonight. I have to say, it is a pleasure to sit in the press box as a Planning Commission member. I see Assembly members do it at my meetings, so I'm going to take advantage tonight. But I will say, it's my very first time testifying as a member of the public on any issue. I think it's actually more nerve-wracking on this end than on that end, which I'm sure many of you can attest to. So you received my written comment. My lengthy written comment, and unfortunately, I didn't have time to really boil it down to some serious talking points here, but I think that's okay. I think I'm just going to talk to you as a D1 resident. I live at 8317 North Douglas Highway, and perhaps interject a little interpretation as a Planning Commission member as well. But I'll say you're going to hear comment tonight. Because finally, at least North Douglas is sort of woken up to what's happened in the table of permissible uses. And it's really unfortunate, because even as I sat on the Planning Commission, I tried to do outreach. But I have to say, a few people were interested, but most just thought they didn't feel they were endangered to commercial uses. I have yet to run across a single North Douglas resident that actually understood what we did to the table of permissible uses, unless they knew me or you or some other member of city government that was involved. And I find that extremely problematic. I mean, I understand the city does public notice. We have minimum requirements for public notice and all of that. And at the same time, I just kind of boil it down to people are busy raising kids, you know? They're working multiple jobs. And you're doing your K2 stories and your KINY, and at the same time, they trust us to make decisions about where we live and where we go home every night. Anyway, it's been alarming. I'll just say that. I can't speak for any of the other D1 rural reserve neighborhoods, but as far as my own, nobody knew. I didn't hear a peep of anybody. Let me see. I'm a little bit alarmed by some of the messaging that's come from CBJ, and you actually heard it with the prior person that testified, that the decision, there's like this, I'll just say, there is this implicit message that the decision has been done in D1, and also Rural Reserve also. Yes, we amended the table of permissible uses. In D1 in particular, it's with conditional use permit only at the discretion of the Planning Commission. We have ordinances that regulate those decisions but set criteria. It is not done. And I think for you to de-empower neighborhoods to come in and speak to you about this because you amended the table of permissible uses, you didn't put a 1 in the box, you put a 3. conditional use permit. Maybe you should check our local code about what that means. It means there are criteria, there's staff report, and there is decision making by a citizen body that sit in your seats. So please don't demotivate our population in testifying. Let me see. And I will say, with that change to the table of permissible uses that allowed it in D1 outside the urban service boundary, which I feel to be an arbitrary boundary, not based in marijuana or anything else, it's just arbitrary. It feels to me, I checked the minutes, it feels to me like you made it on a subjective interpretation of what you feel low density to be. But I kid you not, you clear cut the trees in North Douglas, it is not low density necessarily. I could subdivide my lot, put in two marijuana farms, both via CUPs, force my neighbors to look at two grow houses at a total of 1,000 square feet. That's not low density. Not even close. So anyway, with the change in the table of permissible uses, which for those of you that aren't familiar with our zoning code as intimately as the Assembly and myself, that's where we suggest certain uses are allowable or allowable with conditions or prohibited even for that matter in different districts around our community. We answered the where question, but we didn't answer the how. So yes, let's just take D1 for example. I'm most equipped to talk to that one because that is my home district. We said, yes, by conditional use permit per the discretion of the Planning Commission, but we did not say how. We didn't say chemicals. We didn't speak to hazardous materials. We didn't speak to environmental concerns. We just said potentially possible. Are we limited tonight?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I'm sorry. I must have missed that at the entry. But anyway, we didn't answer the how. So let me see. I'm busy tonight preparing for two meetings. I have this one tonight. I have my own Planning Commission meeting tomorrow night. And I would say tonight is about hazardous materials. When it comes to the ordinance, I support the ordinance on the paper. I wrote you an amendment that speaks to the use of the same hazardous materials that you speak to about in manufacturing that are used in cultivation. So if you're concerned about public health and safety for manufacturing of personal use marijuana in all zones across the borough, that should apply to any commercial whatnot. I think you need to really be careful with that. If you're saying it's dangerous, if one type of activity is dangerous using chemicals, those chemicals that are used in different types of activities around marijuana, they're also equally dangerous, if not even more, because of the scale of commercial activity. I guess the beeper went off, so I will just leave it at that. I think my closing comment is please pay particular attention to my bullet called reality check in the comment. I think no matter how much good planning we do at the Assembly and the Planning Commission, there's the reality of what happens in this community. We see good citizens come before us every other week at the Planning Commission. There's a whole other population that isn't even coming before us to ask permission. So I think you may think in a perfect world everybody's following the rules, but they are not necessarily doing that. And side yard setbacks are not large enough to mitigate the impacts of inappropriate use of hazardous materials in residential zones. With that, I'll close.
Thank you, Ms. Gurry. Are there
Thank
questions?
You. Apologies for going over time.
It's only the privilege of being on the Planning Commission that allows that.
You've earned it.
You've earned it, right? Everyone here has earned it. But are there questions for Ms. Gurry? Okay, thank you very much. Back to the Assembly. What is your desire? Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance 2016-02B. And I think I heard discussion, so I won't ask for unanimous consent.
Okay. You've heard the motion. Is there objection?
I wouldn't really say objection, but in talking to a few different people, including the fire department, and looking at Ms. Gruey's notes, I would think that if you look at the, we have that it would be water-based or food-based extraction methods. And in talking to different people, I was wondering if we could use alcohol or similar organic methods to incorporate some of those changes for alcohol-based, you know what I mean, they're doing there, right?
Ms. White, can you just clarify where you want to put that, or what you want to, what line or what?
Well, I guess I would have to get into the actual ordinance itself, but I was looking at the description here. There you go. So it's got, because it's still within residential zones, but the point is that, like, when they use the pure grain alcohol, Everclear, that's still considered flammable, but it's not explosive. It's not going to go boom like butane. And then the language that Ms. Gruy had in there, or similar organic compounds, and so it would be on line... manufacture any the water or food-based extraction. So I guess water-based, comma, alcohol, comma, or similar organic methods or food-based extraction.
Let me just clarify. So you're trying to disallow...
No, where they'd still be where we've...
In other words, this says everything's prohibited except water-based or food-based. That's what this says already.
Right, but I still want to allow alcohol or similar organic.
Ms. White, I think if you would like to put an amendment into this, maybe you should do that.
That's what I was trying to do.
I'm just trying to clarify what I have.
And then we can do that after we hear the amendment. Go ahead. Ms. White?
Yeah, that's what I was making a motion that we add an amendment to allow, you know, where we have other than water-based or food-based extraction, lines 20 and 21, to also include alcohol or similar organic methods in there.
Mr. Keel.
So, Madam Mayor, I'll object to the amendment, at least for a question. I get alcohol-based, and I guess I might actually ask the fire chief if he agrees about the risk level. But the phrase or similar organic method, I'm not sure what...
Okay, no, we can leave that one out, just the alcohol-based, I guess is what I was trying to add. I'm sorry. Looking at this now, I see what you mean.
So you're withdrawing or similar organic methods from your
alcohol
amendment?
Okay. Just adding the alcohol. Yeah. Alcohol-based or food-based. Yes, that's what I'm trying to do.
Chief, there's a request that you come up and speak to the amendment that adds alcohol to the definition.
My understanding is that grain alcohol is commonly used similar to like in cooking and restaurants where they put, you know, high proof alcohol and it flashes and it looks really neat in the big fry pan sauteing things. You know, it doesn't create the explosive environment that the butane and the liquid propanes do, but it's still flammable, but it's similar to the cooking process and there's a high water content, so as it slowly boils off, it doesn't have the same hazards that the gas is gaseous products do.
And could it start a fire?
Yeah, it could start a fire.
Are there questions? Yes, Ms. Glaszewski.
Yes, so it seems to me that water-based and food-based is safer than alcohol, correct?
I'm not sure exactly what the definition of food-based is, so that part I'm kind of vague on. I learned about this kind of last minute this evening. Mm-hmm.
But alcohol is flammable.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I guess, Chief, just to go back a little bit on what the Marijuana Policy Committee looked at. As we were looking at, obviously, licensed businesses would not be included in this ordinance, right? Because your fire marshal's going to inspect them and make sure everything's up to snuff and meets all the safety standards. So when we look at a
someone making concentrates for their own home use, own personal use. As I recall the fire marshal's presentation, they didn't have any worries about mechanically agitating marijuana products, and they didn't have any worries about agitating with ice or cold water. They didn't have any worries about simmering in butter or cooking oil. And those, I think, were the food-based extractions we were thinking of. The great concern that was discussed between the committee and the fire marshal was, as has been alluded to tonight, the butane, the propane, these things that can, I think you use the term flash, but blow up. So can you just help me with the alcohol-based extraction methods? How worried are we? We were trying to get it at home-based makers of concentrates here who might make an explosion. Anything can burn. I mean, wood can burn. You're not. What is our risk level with the alcohol-based extractions?
From my research and what I've learned, and granted, people are coming up with new ways to do stuff all the time. Every time we turn around, we're learning something new. But the most common ways that we've been reading about and hearing about is they'll put a tray on like a heating pad and use that to slowly warm it, or put it on a computer CPU so they don't have to put it on a stovetop, because alcohol does have a very low boiling point, and it'll naturally evaporate if you just leave it sit out alone. So I think the risk is less than those explosive compressed gases, but you know, there is a risk, similar as in, you know, if you were cooking with alcohol, it's, or washing parts in your garage with fluids like that. So there is some risk, but it's not to the level that the butane and propane are.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm not sure who to address the question to, whether it's Ms. Mead or our fire chief, but essentially what we want to do is make sure that the definition of food-based does not involve alcohol. Is that the point we're trying to make here? No. I mean, cooking with alcohol could be considered creating a marijuana extract that's food-based. Yes? No? Or am I off-base?
Oh. My understanding is that Ms. White's amendment was to allow alcohol-based methods in addition to these. So I think that's what the intention is.
Was to allow the alcohol-based, just like you get vanilla beans and you put it in Everclear, you make your vanilla.
So the reason why I was confused, because if we're trying to allow for alcohol-based, and yet the questioning is to the fire chief about the flammability and the fire risk of alcohol-based. So I thank you. I now understand what we're trying to do.
Are there other comments?
Yes. I'd just like to add that alcohol is definitely flammable, but it's not explosive.
Well, if I might just say, I don't know for sure what kind you're talking about, but when you go to the restaurant and you get whatever the flaming things that so impressive and all that stuff at your table, I would not want to be really close to that, because it goes boom in the air. So if that's the alcohol we're talking about, I think it could be flammable if you're close by. And I don't know. Anyway, I don't know if that's kind of alcohol you're talking about, but it sounds like it might be. So, okay. That's just my comment on that one. Yes, Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just for information, and maybe people want to deal with it or not, but the regulations approved and signed by the Lieutenant Governor that take effect on the 22nd of February states a marijuana product manufacturing facility may create concentrates only as follows. One, water-based marijuana concentrate may be produced by extracting cannabinoids from marijuana by using water, ice, or dry ice. Food-based marijuana concentrate may be produced by extracting cannabinoids from marijuana through the use of propylene, glycol, glycerin, butter, olive oil, or other typical cooking fats infused dairy butter or oils or fats derived from the natural sources may be used to prepare infused edible products, but may not be prepared as standalone edible products for sale. Solvent-based marijuana concentrate may be produced using hydrocarbons, N-butane, isobutane, propane, heptane, or other solvents or gases the board approves that exhibit low to minimal potential health related toxicity. Approved solvents must be at least 99% purity and must be used, and gives a list. So the state is going to regulate those that are licensed, and those are the definitions that will be used to produce a license. And so a person applying for a conditional use permit will have to show that same thing that they're going to show to the marijuana board to get their license. Since we're dealing with home use for persons that aren't otherwise licensed, you know, if we're going to assume we mean by food-based, I think maybe we need some definitions that are in there. I think we may need to make some clarification on that. But the other thing is, I think, since we're putting basically an ordinance together that will create a civil fine for somebody that we don't otherwise regulate, that the only time we're going to find out they did it wrong is if the fire department gets called, unless there's a complaint from a neighbor and the police have the ability to go in, or the fire department has the authority to go in. We're only really going to find out if they break the law if something tragic happens. And I'm sorry about that, but I think that's really the only thing, because people are growing their 6 plants or 20 plants in this town today. They are extracting oils today illegally, but they're doing it. So I think that if we want to be certain, maybe we need to better define food-based, what that means, and if it includes alcohol or not. But for the real commercial use, I think there are some standards set out that we will be able to look at, that the Planning Commission will look at, in terms of how to do a conditional use permit.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the additional information. That's helpful. I guess my own thought is that the state's regulations, I think, make some meaningful distinctions between using things like butter and oil and using things like dairy products in terms of what you can sell as a standalone concentrate. But that's not a safety problem, right? So that's not what we're dealing with here. And so I guess in terms of this ordinance and dealing with the risk of things going boom, any of those categories of food are okay by me, because none of them go boom. I guess I'd look the city attorney's way just to get her opinion on whether if we want to allow alcohol-based extraction at home, no license, do we need to split that out from water-based or food-based and mention it explicitly?
Ms. B?
When a word is not defined in our code says look to Webster's. Webster's does not typically define food to include alcohol, so if that is something that you want to include, I think you should specifically do so. And this is, as Mr. Jones pointed out, only for the non-licensed entities. Licensed entities are free to do as their permit allows.
And just a follow-up.
Okay, Mr. Q.
So based on the city attorney's answer, I'm going to support Ms. White's amendment. I think it makes sense that we should allow people to do alcohol-based extractions at home. Because it's not going to make the neighbor's house blow up. So it doesn't need to be a crime. So I'm perfectly happy with including alcohol-based as one of the three allowable methods here. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Jones.
Just one comment, and maybe it's not specific to the issue, but I think there are other safety requirements, Mr. Keel, other than whether it's flammable. There are public health, there are poisonings, there are overdoses, there are getting bad product, adulterated product. So there are public safety, there are food safety issues involved, not just whether or not a fire department gets called or a house blows up. And I realize that maybe nobody's been food poisoned by the underground market as it currently is, and people are producing it. But there are other safety issues outside of fires.
Thank you. Ms. White.
If I could just ask a question, the ordinance before us tonight, if I understand it correctly, is to intended to prohibit personal users from manufacturing concentrate in residential areas via methods that have been proven volatile in other communities. So I'm trying to understand why, whether or not someone is going to poison someone who buys it is applicable if it's personal users in the ordinance.
Mr. Jones.
I think we all know that there's an underground market, but under the current ordinance or the resolution initiative, got to get the words right, that were approved by the voters, persons are allowed to grow so much, and they are allowed to give less than 1 ounce to another adult over the age of 21. And so somebody that is growing their six plants that does an extraction can give an equivalent amount of less than 1 ounce of that concentrate to another adult, not sell it, give it. They sell it, they're violating state law because they're not licensed, but they can give it. So it is not just personal use. It is whatever they use and whatever they might want to share with friends. So there is that issue.
Thank you. Yes, Ms. Scheinberg.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just for clarification, this ordinance is no longer just about residential zones. It's applicable throughout the borough, just for clarification.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks. Right. Yes, Ms. Lachowski.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. May I ask a question of Mr. Jones, who's went through a lot of the safety issues. Have you heard of issues with alcohol extraction of marijuana?
No.
Okay, thank you.
You have an amendment before you. It is to add alcohol after water-based, comma, alcohol or food-based extraction. Am I correct? Okay. So is there objection? I object. Okay. All right. Would you call the roll, please?
Ms. White?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Scheinberg?
Yes.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Mayor Becker?
No. The motion passes. We're back to the main ordinance with those words added. Is there a discussion? Is there a motion, or has it already come?
There is a motion.
It has already come. Okay. Is there objection to the total ordinance 2016-02B as amended? Okay. That motion passes. We're now to the next ordinance, 2015-20AA, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $562,327.37 as funding for the Juneau International Airport Runway Rehabilitation Capital Improvement Project, funding provided by the Federal Aviation Administration, Alaska Department of Transportation, and Juneau International Airport's fund balance.
Thank you. Ms. Manager, Madam Manager.
The FAA funding comes from an amendment to the construction grant for the CIP. The amendment work
includes north side runway safety area survey work as well as runway rehabilitation quantity adjustments through construction change orders. The FAA funds 93.75% of the project, with the remainder being split between the Alaska Department of Transportation and the Juneau International Airport. The Alaska Department of Transportation has recently advised the CBJ that funds for airport matching grants will be discontinued, and they have subsequently agreed to continue funding FY16 airport match grants. The airport board approved this action at its August 12, 2015 and September 8, 2015 meetings. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify about Ordinance 2015-20AA? Assembly? Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance 2015-20AA and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? That ordinance passed. Ordinance 2015-20ABB, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $35,000 as funding for a special election. Funding provided by the general fund's fund balance.
Madam Manager.
This supplemental appropriation to the municipal clerk's FY16 budget provides for the cost of labor, advertising, printing, supplies, rentals, and other costs associated with the special election called by the Assembly at its regular meeting on December 21st, 2015. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify about this ordinance, 2015-20ABB? Assembly? Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move approval of Ordinance 2015-20AB, parentheses B.
Is there objection? I object. Call the roll, please. Mr. Nankervis, do you want to speak?
No, I just maintain the objection I made several weeks ago. Thank you.
Madam Clerk.
Okay. Ms. Troll.
Yes.
Ms. White.
No.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Scheinberg?
Yes.
Mayor Becker?
No. The motion passes. We're now to unfinished business. Madam Clerk, Ordinance 2015-51B. And did you want to...
This ordinance was before you at the last meeting. The Assembly tabled it because we had the incorrect ordinance in the packet. And so for Assembly to take action, it needs to be removed from the table.
Okay. So she couldn't have even read the title, Ms. Manager. We need to remove this from the table, and so I need someone to make a motion to that effect. Mr. Jones.
Madam Mayor, I move that Ordinance Serial Number 2015-51B be brought before the Assembly for action tonight.
Thank you. Is there any objection? Okay. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the Personnel Management Code relating to partially exempt and exempt service classifications.
Thank you, Madam Manager.
This ordinance would amend the Personnel Management Code relating to the classification of exempt and partially exempt employees. The amendment would clarify the exempt status of the city manager, the city attorney, the Bartlett Regional Hospital chief executive officer, chief financial officer, and licensed medical staff credentialed by and working at Bartlett Regional Hospital. Version B of this ordinance removes the Bartlett Regional Hospital chief behavioral health officer from the exemption classification and better defines the medical staff to whom this ordinance applies. The version B amendments are included by italics. The Bartlett Regional Hospital Board of Directors has reviewed and approved the changes. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify about Ordinance 2015-51B? Assembly? Yes, Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would move the Assembly approve serial number 2015-51B and would ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Okay. That ordinance passes. We're to new business. Madam Manager.
Yes, these are regulations of the Community Development Department, Title IV, to repeal those that are obsolete regulations. Remind the Assembly that you can take no action. You can approve these that with an effective date of 7 days following the adoption, but you cannot make changes to those. You can return them back to the department and state reasons for the disapproval, and then we will bring them back to you. They have been noticed properly as signed off by the city attorney's office. I recommend that the regulations be approved.
Thank you. Mr. Keel?
Orders of the day.
Orders of the day has been called for. Is there objection? Thank you. We now are at a liquor license recommended for protest. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Tonight at the Human Resources Committee, we reviewed the the liquor license protests, and I'll take these in order. First one was restaurant and eating place license renewal for Rodfathers. The owner of Rodfathers, Rod Morrison, came before the committee, presented to the committee his signed off payment plan and the fact that he has been making his payments. There seemed to have been, with the number of licenses, apparently some miscommunications between the collections office and the sales tax office. Sales tax office said they still owed. The collection office has signed off on a collection plan. And so the Human Resources Committee is recommending to the Assembly that we waive our right to protest the renewal of this liquor license.
Thank you. You've heard the Human Resources recommendation. Is there objection to that? Yes, Ms. Lachesky.
Just that it also said as long as that agreement had been was being followed. We
sure.
Wait
yeah.
For protest as long as they're doing what they say.
Okay, with that understanding, is this accepted? Okay, thank you. Mr. Jones?
Thank you. The other license that we had was a Tides Complex Incorporated doing business as a Dragon Inn. And Mr. Lamb came before the Human Resources Committee. He, too, stated that he had a payment plan, that he had come in, talked to the collections office. They said they had to go over and talk to the attorney. He said he had before him the documentation of the check he wrote to the attorney or in the attorney's office. And after some discussion and some discussion with the deputy city clerk who staffs the Human Resources Committee and who collects all that information, the Human Resources Committee tabled any action on this liquor license until our February 29th, and we requested through the deputy city clerk that she gather all of the documentation from Mr. Lamb and anybody else involved in the city, see if she can put together whether or not this person is in fact following his payment plan or not, and bring that information back to the Human Resources Committee at our February 29th meeting.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Jones? Is there any objection to tabling this? Maybe we should take a vote on that. Or do we have to take a vote on that? Can we just do it?
Hearing
we can just
no
do
objection.
It? I'm sorry?
Hearing no
objection. No objection, so I guess we're okay. Thank you. I'm sorry?
Good. I said you're welcome.
staff reports.
Yep.
Madam Manager.
Yes, thank you. I just, at the Public Works and Facilities Committee meeting, for those of you who were there, we informed the Public Works and Facilities Committee about a project labor agreement that we were not going forward with, which was for the Douglas Harbor project. And we also noted that we will be putting PLAs on two projects, the Capital Transit Maintenance Facility and the Seawalk Phase 2. Both of them fit the criteria and over the $4 million. And there are memos in your packet that outline why we're moving forward with those two projects for PLAs. We don't do PLAs very often, and I thought because it had gone to Public Works and Facilities, it should come to the full Assembly so you are aware of the decision that was made.
Thank you. Are there questions for the manager? Okay. Thank you. Madam Manager. We're into assembly reports. I'll go ahead and start, lest any of you think I haven't done anything since our last assembly meeting. Not that we haven't all had seven meetings. Well, other things that I've done, I went to DZ Students, had a housing project display for us and talked about housing projects, and they had places in the city where they thought houses could go. It was very interesting. I gave a speech at the Martin Luther King Day. We, of course, had the legislative reception. That thank you to our staff and to Alaska Committee. Mental Health Trust, I went to that wonderful dedication of $350,000 to the Housing First Fund. It's a wonderful event. Gave a speech at the Alaska Young Fisheries Summit they were having. Of course, JADC and the Chamber Boards continue to go to that. Today, I gave a welcome to the Innovation Summit, and I didn't realize that this job had so much speech writing. But it does. And just so, while I have your attention, just to remind you, tomorrow night we start at 5 o'clock with our meet and greet with the two city manager candidates with an assembly meeting in 224 afterwards to discuss. And then Wednesday night, we have, in 224, we have candidate interviews for District 2 position. And then after that, depending on if we stop early or we continue, whatever that happens, we'll have the finance meeting. If it looks like we're going too late and we need another time to deliberate, we'll go on the 11th and finish up. Okay, that is it. Thank you. Mr. Keel, Committee of the Whole.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Committee of the Whole met on February the 1st. We forwarded the marijuana concentrate ordinance that was passed tonight. Got a preview of the changes, or a brief overview of the changes to the lands management plan. That will come before us at a subsequent Committee of the Whole so that we could have more than one to chew on the 120-some pages of that. Gave staff some direction with regard to changing the way the Stabler's Point Rock Quarry is staffed, which involved a mid-year budget change. Amended and forwarded the resolution on the sustainable state budget plan that was adopted tonight. Got some initial reports from the finance director on the state of city finances and debt and spending and all manner of other things, and then considered the question of biosolids. And at that meeting, the Committee of the Whole directed staff to proceed forward with the biosolids dryer option. And no doubt we'll see implementing ordinances come before us before too terribly long.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Ms. White, Planning Commission.
Well, I had my first Planning Commission meeting a couple of weeks ago. It was definitely interesting to go into the first meeting as a liaison and actually understand everything they were talking about. We had a great presentation from Pat Carroll from Department of Transportation with a rundown of projects for 2016 and 17 to the point where I realized I couldn't write fast enough, and I emailed him and asked him for a copy of his notes, which he willingly provided. So if anybody else is interested in those. And then Eric Bell from planning, from the planning department, from community development department, gave a presentation on building activity within Juneau for 2015. And once again, I found myself not taking notes fast enough, and so I ended up sending him an email and recommending some slight tweaks where he could actually do a presentation to another organization with which I am active. And it was pretty interesting. But I have a feeling I might not get to be at the whole Planning Commission meeting tomorrow, but I would miss it.
Thank you.
And so none of you get mad at me. I did jump and gave her the committee report time because I don't know.
You want me to just
it's so
wait?
Important.
I can wait on the other
Please
two.
Wait for
yes,
your other
I will.
Mr. Matt, it was not favoritism. It was a mistake. Mr. Nankervis, Finance.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. As you stated, we have a Finance Committee on Wednesday meeting at 5:30 here in the chambers. I would ask all of you to get with me if you have something that you want added to the agenda. Send me an email. As most of you know, I'm not very good about email, so I would recommend calling me as well and telling me so that I can pencil it in. But if you have ideas, topics you want to talk about, things you want brought up, please get them to me, and I will try and get them included. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Glaszewski, Public Works.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Public Works met on February 1st. We talked about several of the things that you saw on the agenda today, including the cruise ship berth, Douglas Harbor Phase 3, Whittier Street. Those were all passed by the Assembly today. The director talked about an idea for parking management. There's lots of different entities in the city that currently have something to do with parking, and he has an idea for consolidating all that you'll probably see at a committee of the whole meeting, possibly at some point as the idea gets further fleshed out. We also heard reports about several things going on, including Valley Snow Storage coming up with the Forest Service redoing their plan for the facilities out there. That facility for snow storage is possibly not on their plans, but that's several years down the road. But the continuing story of snow storage could be back on our radar again. And the next meeting is the 22nd.
Thank you, Ms. Glaszewski. Ms. Troll, Lands.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Lands Committee met on February 1st, and we had a presentation from Mr. Cheney and Mr. Worrell with the Tlingit Haida Association regarding a potential partnership proposal for the Peterson Hill subdivision. It was just talking about a concept to explore how to marry their interest in housing and their ability to finance. And so it was just a conceptual approval, and we will be getting back more details as that moves forward. We also heard about the options of using a city lease to help spur some development on the Franklin lot. And the Lands Committee approved continuing to explore that option in terms of a long-term lease to help that project move along. And that was it. It was a short meeting because of our following meetings. And the Lands Committee meets next on February 22nd, and it will focus specifically on the Renninger subdivision. And we will be having a presentation from the Pacific Development Group about a potential public-private partnership new concept for one of the lots up there. And they will be here in person to do a presentation, and I encourage as many of you to listen to that, because it'll be a different way for us to approach the housing issue.
Thank you, Mr. Joel. Mr. Jones, Human Resources.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We had a rather lengthy and full agenda tonight, so I'll try to go through this appropriately quickly, but complete. We reviewed potential appointments to the Building Code Advisory Committee, and the Human Resources Committee is recommending Christopher Giannotti and Douglas Murray be reappointed to the Building Code Advisory Committee for terms expiring 11/30/2018.
You've heard the human resource suggestions. Are there any objections to those two people being appointed? Thank you. They are appointed.
We also reviewed the Historic Resources Advisory Committee and appointments. We had one vacancy. Human Resources Committee recommends Gary Gillette be appointed to the seat for a term expiring 6/30/19.
You've heard the human resource request for that appointment. Is there an objection? Thank you. Gary is.
Thank you. We also received a annual report from the Juneau Affordable Housing Commission, and just two notes that they talked about that I wanted to highlight. One is the housing action plan, and while the report says it's completed, during testimony they did state that it was still under review by committee, was still receiving some public comments, and it had not yet been fully approved by them to be brought forward to the assembly for final approval. And also on the mobile home down payment assistance loan pilot program, the chair indicated that that was, she believed, was currently at the Department of Law for review. And the lawyer shaking her head, I report what she told us. So I'm not exactly sure where it is, but that's what she said. In addition, we had appointments to the Juneau Affordable Housing Commission. There were three open seats, and the Human Resources Committee recommends the reappointment of Margaret O'Neill and Mandy Cole, and the initial appointment of Kathleen Strassbaugh to those three open seats, all terms expiring 1/31/2019.
You've heard the recommendation of the Human Resource Committee. Is there objection? Those members are appointed.
Okay. We then looked at the Juneau Human Rights Commission, and the Human Resources Committee recommends the appointment of Samantha Weinstein to a term expiring 5/31/17, and the appointment of Michael Scott to a term expiring 5/31/16.
You've heard the recommendation of the Human Resource. Is there objection? Thank you. They're appointed.
Next, we got the annual report from the Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee. Josh Anderson, as the vice chair, presented the report. He was very complimentary of the last year of the staff support from the director, Kirk Duncan. Felt that a lot of the issues before the PRAC were moving quicker. They were getting better information. They were able to do better work. They did a lot of highlighting of things that they had done related to review of fees, helping get the Treadwell Arena together, the assistance they gave in information and the small group to the lands management plan, which you heard about from the lands committee. Talked a lot about the Zach Gordon, their use of social media in terms of promote Parks and Rec. In addition, they talked about working on cost recovery issues with all the facilities, updating the Parks and Rec comprehensive plan. There were some questions related to exactly what that meant, where were they at. So I think we had talked about that several times in various things. Mr. Duncan reported that he currently has a request out. They are trying to hire a part-time temporary position that will help them with the comp plan process and also with their cost recovery plan and their fee plan. He considers that to be a temporary position, and it's out for recruitment now, and he thinks that that will be a two-year process to look at all the fees and the cost recovery structure within Parks and Rec and to redo the comp plan in a way in which it would come forward to the assembly. We had that review. In addition, we had appointments to the Parks and Rec Committee, and the Human Resources Committee recommends that Tracy Gilmore be appointed to a seat whose term would expire 2/28/2019.
You've heard the recommendation of the Human Resources. Is there objection? Thank you. That appointment is made.
And just for the information of the Assembly, there were three open seats. There were three incumbents. We received no application from Jerry Landry, and we received no application from Francis Dowd. We were told by the Assistant City Clerk that under our rules, those two persons will continue to serve on the Parks and Rec Committee unless they specifically resign or until we fill the seat. And so the Human Resources Committee recommended that those vacancies still be placed out there and advertised until filled. We then looked at the sales tax board of appeals and appointments. Again, we had three seats, and the Human Resources Committee recommends Tim Cottingen and Mark Smith be appointed to seats to expire 12/31/2018.
You've heard the recommendation of the Human Resources Committee. Is there any objection? Thank you.
And again, we have a seat that is filled with an incumbent that did not apply, and the same rules apply. That person will serve until that person either resigns or we fill the position. With that, that was all of the appointments. We've dealt with the two liquor licenses. In addition, we were provided two letters that had been sent to the mayor from the Juneau Commission on Aging, requesting that the mayor send these letters forward to our delegation. I think you will find them on your desk. They have a cover sheet that looks like this. Hopefully you have them in front of you. We will take the first letter first, which the subject is re-support of the Alaska Commission on Aging Sunrise legislation. Just to bring you up to date, the Senate version is Senate Bill 124. It currently resides in Senate Finance. The House version is House Bill 226. It currently resides in House Finance. On 4/10/15, Legislative Audit did their sunset audit, and they recommend extending the date until 6/30/2024. In reviewing the letter, there was some question about whether it should be this long or exactly what the content ought to be, but the Human Resources Committee is recommending that the mayor send this letter of support with any changes she feels might be necessary. It's pretty non-controversial and probably going to go through the legislature without any problems.
Thank you.
The second letter is about very extensive. It talks about legislation. It talks about budget issues, some of which I don't think any of us have ever talked to. We haven't talked to our lobbyist about it. And so the committee is recommending that the mayor not forward this letter. It was way too broad, issues that we hadn't talked about, but also some caution that perhaps if the manager or the mayor or anybody else talking with our lobbyist, if any of these issues suddenly pop up on the radar and are possibly adverse to the city of Burlington, you know, we should pay attention to. But it was our recommendation from the Human Resources Committee that this letter not go any farther than where it's at, which is here.
Thank you.
Okay, and I think that was our committee tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Would you like me to start the other way so you can read, or would you like to start on committee reports?
Oh, you mean liaison report?
Mean liaison.
Yeah, I can do mine fairly quickly.
Liaison
I think.
Reports, okay.
JADC met. Ms. Troll and the mayor were both there. The primary part on the agenda was Representative Tito, Representative Munoz, and Senator Egan were there for about 45 minutes. I don't think we learned anything more than what we had when they had met with us as a group, other than there are a few more specific pieces of legislation out there. Their feeling about sort of where they are at today is what we've heard most along. I think there was one piece that we learned. I think Representative Tito has submitted a bill related to municipalities being able to voluntarily contribute dollars to the ferry system. None of us had seen it. We asked him to send us a copy. I haven't seen one yet. Maybe Mr. Keel knows a little bit more about that. There was some discussion after he left about an authority over for the ferry, some issues that Southeast Conference might be dealing with, but JDC other than wishing that we had a better handle on what people were thinking about in terms of the ferry system. There wasn't really any action. And other than that, it was a pretty routine business for the JDC. The Innovation Summit is taking up all their time. I did one of the tours today. I did the research and development tour, so we went to the marketplace. We went out to the NOAA facility and then to the Forest Research Center as part of the tour. I had not been to any of those three, so it was really good for me to get there and see and listen. The person that primarily gave us the tour out at NOAA, I've had a lot of dealings with because he's one of the head judges for the robotics design for all the robotics competitions through JDC that I'm a judge for on some other parts. But that was really interesting, and I did enjoy the one keynote I got to hear today from the innovation, and I'll be there again tomorrow. The Downtown Business Association met. They had pretty routine business. They did talk about the parking survey they did, which they had forwarded to Mr. Watt. That was part of the Public Works report related to parking. Their next meeting is the 25th of February. And if anybody wants to attend in my stead, please do so. I forget where it's at, but I'll try to let you know when I get the email. I'll be in Arizona, so I won't be there. If anybody wants to go to the Downtown Business Association on Thursday, the 25th of February at 8:30 in the morning. The Airport Board, my first meeting was to be tomorrow, but I'll be otherwise occupied with all the rest of you. And the Commission on Aging, my first meeting as a liaison should have been on the 11th, but I will be in the Marijuana Control Board meetings all day. So I will not be at my first meeting for that. And with that, that's my liaison report, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. As noted, I did attend the JADC meeting, and I requested that for the next JADC meeting that we look at JADC becoming part of Alaska's future, which is the group that is trying to support action now on the state's fiscal plan. I was able to attend the chamber lunch in which there was Mr. Duncan was a speaker about that, and it's an effort to try and grow the voice to the legislature to say address it now, you know, deal with one plan or another, the permit fund earnings. It's a very generic statement. I encourage everybody just to go to their website, Alaska's Future. And I'm hoping that is something that we'll be able to support down the line. January 30th, the Juneau Commission on Sustainability, they held their work session. I did not attend that. It was a Saturday, and I kind of feel like if I'm good to get to the meetings, that's good. But at that work session, they discussed once again the energy plan, and it is getting finalized. It required a lot more of the involvement by the commission itself to fill in a lot of the data gaps. So that still remains their number one priority, is to get that done. They discussed a sense that in order to really help implement the energy plan along with the climate action plan, that somewhere along the line there's going to be a need for some dedicated staff. Otherwise, those would be reports that will just sit on the shelves. They talked a little bit about their effort to grow awareness about sustainability and in the community in terms of outreach, looking at potentially having a speakers bureau, a sustainability award, those types of things. They want to try and elevate the awareness about, you know, renewable energy in the city, as well as things related to our food security. So it seemed to be a pretty productive retreat for the Juneau Commission. On February 2nd, the Affordable Housing Commission met, and I was able to attend that meeting. And as Mr. Jones noted, the Housing Action Plan is
still quite not ready for public outreach, and that is because they felt that certain sections needed to be rewritten to make it more accessible for the public. And staff is working on that. They have established a subcommittee to ensure that once the Housing Action Plan is ready to go public, that there is a broad public outreach for that. They discussed the Renager subdivision, and Mr. Mark Lewis with the Pacific Development Group kind of gave a high-level overview of the proposal, and I encourage the members of the Affordable Housing Commission to attend our Lands Committee on February 22nd as a follow-up to that. They then also discussed the funding shortfall for the high school house build construction program. Apparently that's being zeroed out in the budget. And so they want letters of support. They think it's a worthwhile program. They don't really want us to see it begin to languish due to not enough budgetary support. And in regards to the mobile home loan thing, there's been a bit of miscommunication. I may have had a hand in that. I think staff is working on that. It's back into lands for addressing some comments from the law department. So it is being moved on. It's not necessarily, you know, sitting in one place or the other. It is being acted on. Unless Ms. Mead would like to make any further comments.
No.
Okay.
It is not in law.
Right. It's not in law. It's in lands. And with that, that concludes my liaison reports.
Thank you, Ms. Chaul. Ms. Glashevsky.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ms. Chaul reminded me that I did attend the Affordable Housing Commission last meeting to see that I understood where the Housing Action Plan was and whether the Affordable Housing Commission was essentially all in on that plan. It was unclear to me who was sort of the client for that plan, and I, you know, they really confirmed that they were all in and were excited about what was in there and were going to do what they could to promote it and work on it. So that was good to hear. The Parks and Rec Advisory Committee's meeting in February was canceled for lack of a quorum, and they meet next March 1st. The Local Emergency Planning Committee meeting on January 13th, I attended, and one of the main things they talked about was Smart 911. Someone from the Juneau Commission on Aging brought that issue to the committee, and it's the kind of thing they've talked about before, but Smart 911 is where you can voluntarily put a profile into a system that the first responders would then know about you, and you could voluntarily put your health status, your loved one's health status, particularly people with dementia, and it's the kind of thing that they have talked about before. It, of course, costs a lot of money, but it's an interesting concept that they're going to investigate and see what they can, whether that's viable for our town. And they meet, the LEPC meets next this Wednesday, on this Wednesday on the 10th at noon. That's the liaison report that I have.
Thank you. Ms. Scheinberg.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Eagle Crest Board met last week. I was not able to attend. I was out of town, but I read all the materials and talked with the manager after the meeting to find out what had happened and what they had done. And he mostly just a little report. Today is day 45 out of a 90-day season. Despite the patches of warm and rainy weather, things are doing well. Last weekend, the skiing was great, even though it was sort of warm. They are, you know, have sold many fewer season passes than in years past, but when it's cold, they sell many more day passes than they're used to selling. So things are evening out, and don't forget, they're only halfway through the season. It's sunny and cold in March, and they'll probably at their next meeting begin to work on their budget, which they had sort of previewed in this packet's materials, and it looked like it was pretty much an even course, which and projecting that fiscally, even though we've had some, you know, a couple of rough years. So I thought that was good. And that's the report.
Thank you. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Docks and Harbors met on the 28th of January, and they discussed numerous things that came up on our agenda tonight, which were the Douglas Harbor and the cruise ship berths, which we took care of for them. And we have the Harbor Master Dave Borg in the back. You want to come up and say anything else? I was going to cut it short tonight, Mr. Borg. Everything else, I gave a long report last time, and everything else is going according to schedule. Things are going well. Their next meeting is February 25th here at 5 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. White.
Okay. Well, let's see. Since I already did the one on the Planning Commission. Let's see. Last week, Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau held a retreat that spanned over a two-day period, an afternoon. It was morning one day and then the afternoon the next, that you had plenty of time to absorb. I was able to attend about half of that. It was coordinated by Samantha Dye, and it was definitely a different way of looking at the retreat. Most of the members came out with a better idea of how they needed to do things. In other news, with JCBB, we will be hosting four tour operators next week that are actually on their way to Anchorage for the Go West Summit. That takes place in Anchorage the 21st to 25th. And that's a trade show that caters to operators selling tours in the western states. The tour operators will be in town to experience Juneau and will work with the tourism marketing manager on potential itineraries to include in their product line. So they'll ski Eagle Crest, they will go flight seeing with Temsco, they'll view the Sobeloff Center, and they will do the historical progressive dinner by Juneau Food Tours. And then one of our, that company, it's called Tourico Holidays, is actually coming up early specifically to work on contracts with our local hotels. So then we'll have a few people from Juneau that will go up to that convention, where there will be 45 different domestic and international tour operators, and they'll be up there to market about Juneau. That was JCVB. With the Aquatics Board, they have their full meeting of the entire board on February 16th at 4 p.m. upstairs. I had barely missed their actual last one, so I went to their finance committee meeting just to kind of go say hi to a few of the people, which turned out I knew everybody there anyway. It was almost a Rotary makeup. That was kind of cool. And there's some pretty interesting information coming down that has to do with the number of passes sold, something similar to how things are going with Eagle Crest, but it's actually pretty exciting, and it looks like they've been pretty effective. For a different event, I finally got into the Valley Library a little bit deeper than just the conference room outside, and my husband had gone to a meeting there the week before, and he's just like, wow, we need to go spend some more time there. So he was definitely impressed. And then, of course, we had our Innovation Summit today, and I think that's about it.
Thank you. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The last school board meeting was on January the 12th, at which time the schools were hard at their finals and planning homecomings, but I think they've moved past that, the benefit of monthly meetings. The board did get updates on some changes to how the district was doing their instructional coaches. They no longer have the budget, as we all recall, to have an instructional coach for each elementary school. And so they have a math instructional coach, one for language arts, and one who does what they call content integration. And the three of them serve all of the elementary schools. It's functionally shifted a lot of work onto the principals, the elementary leadership teams. But that's one way they've been able to try and adapt to budget cuts with the minimum impact on class sizes. They also had some conversations as they prepared to finish out their financial statements for the previous year. That was a little delayed. On a couple of slightly negative fund balances, they'll be able to adjust within the school district to cover those in activities and food services. And the administration told the board they're feeling pretty confident they have the safeguards in place to avoid that problem happening again next year. the school district will also be soliciting a new contract for pupil transportation, which is the education speak for the buses. And that should be out by the end of the year, be in effect the following year, as I understand it. We are 1 year off the cycle of the other big five districts, which will help us out a little bit as we go into the anticipated end of inflation adjustments in pupil transportation funding from the state. We'll be able to look at, Juneau School District will be able to look at the pupil transportation contract knowing that in advance as opposed to having it sprung partway through. So the school board meets next tomorrow night, and I'll be here with all of you. So I'll have to get an after-the-fact report from them. The University of Alaska Southeast Campus Council met 1 week ago. Oh,
Mr. Jones seems to...
I had a question on the school district, if you don't mind. I know there was an article, I guess, in today's paper about a budget meeting that they had, sort of get budget ideas. And then I noticed that they've scheduled a school district budget work session for Saturday, the 20th of February at 8 a.m. Is that a public meeting? Is that a internal meeting? I know it was publicly noticed. It came out today, I believe. And some email we got from the clerk's office about the next week's public notice. And I was just curious, is that a public meeting or is that just more of a staff meeting similar to what was talked about in the paper this morning? Because 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday seems a strange time to be gathering quality public input. But
Mr. Jones, I will have to look into that and get back to you. I am just checking their website as we speak, and I'm not seeing it among the listed board meetings just yet.
Okay, thank you.
I'm happy to let you know what I find.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to go waste my morning, but it is interesting if they are going to have a budget process and that's public. I don't know whether I'll go or not, but I just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
I don't know about your Saturdays, but mine are so booked driving children around and getting them to events at 8 a.m. is about the only time I have
to take my wife to the haircut and my dog to get her nails done. But other than that, I could go to the school district. It might be just as painful.
I will refrain from a comment about our meetings exactly. And how they compare. The University of Alaska Southeast Campus Council met on this past Monday, February 1st, and had significant discussion about the work that the university is doing system-wide on what they are euphemistically calling strategic pathways, which doesn't seem to have anything to do with what it really is, which is consolidating the leadership of major programs at a given university. So the best example of that is one they've built that way, the nursing program, which is led out of the University of Alaska Anchorage, even though we have faculty and students here in Southeast. Those faculty are UAA faculty. As part of their adaptation to the coming budget cuts at the state, the university is looking at doing that in a lot more places. And so we had conversations about which programs should naturally be housed at University of Alaska Southeast to be delivered statewide. And there is some ongoing concern and work when it comes to teacher education. Up until this last year, the University of Alaska Southeast delivered more teacher ed degrees than any other unit in the state. Last year, we fell behind by 3 degrees. It's worth noting, however, that UAS had vastly fewer students enrolled and yet somehow delivered only 3 fewer degrees. So the student success rate is a great deal better at UAS, and that, in addition to lower administrative cost per student and per class, would seem to make University of Alaska Southeast the natural home for teacher education. And so the campus council talked about ways that we can support and work with the regents and statewide administration on making the natural home for that program UAS, where it seems to be most efficiently and most successfully run. we did hear a presentation on some of the career tech and vocational programs that the university runs. Everything from our high school teachers
teaching college classes or classes where students get college credits in the high school to the mind training program, some of the pre-apprenticeship programs, and so on. One of the most innovative things they're doing in fisheries technology is a new twist on distance delivery, because there are a lot of folks who fish much of the year and just don't really have the bandwidth out on the fishing grounds to get their classes through distance delivery. And so the university has invested in some iPads or other tablets with waterproof cases and loaded the entire course, from videotaped lectures to materials to tests and all, onto those iPads, which are sent out when you start the course and you send them back with your final exams. Mm-hmm. So another innovative program that UAS is working on and helping folks in our region do more and do better while they work. I think, Madam Mayor, that concludes my liaison reports. Thank you.
Thank you. We don't have any presiding officer reports.
Just one more. I did mention that the DBA meeting, they had talked about whether or not they were going to have a mayoral debate, and email just came in. The DIG had not met. The Downtown Improvement Group had not met in the last couple of weeks. And this Friday, the DIG is not meeting, but the DBA is taking that time to have a panel with the two mayoral candidates. So the Downtown Improvement Group won't be meeting this Friday at 9, but the DBA is taking that slot to have a panel discussion with the two mayoral candidates. So, and I just got that email, and I didn't want to mention it because they hadn't solidified it at the meeting. But
where would they be meeting?
It's going to be at the Senate building, third floor, same place the DIG's been meeting.
Thank you.
You bet.
What time?
9 a.m.
Yeah.
Okay. 9 a.m. Friday morning, the same time as the DIG normally meets.
Are there any other comments, questions from the assembly members? Mr. Nan Curvis, Ms. Scheinberg, Mr. Keel. Oh,
okay. You beat me to it. Go ahead.
Oh, well, when Mr. Keel was giving his report, it reminded me, I think while we were here tonight at the Innovation Summit, there's an announcement. People are down, I believe, from UAF to recognize that Juneau is being designated as a statewide research center of excellence, and JEDC and the Research and Development Cluster has been working on this for like 3 years, and it's actually a really big deal to get it. I sort of listened in on some of these conversations, and I think that it's all part of the idea to sort of make daylight more the extensive research that goes on here in Juneau. And there are some ideas that I believe are still being bandied about to have banners at maybe the airport, the ferry terminal, maybe even the airport in Seattle, just sort of getting this on the minds of visitors to understand this. And it's sort of integrates with the NOAA facility in the university. So it's kind of a big deal, so I thought it's worth mentioning, because I don't know if we would have a role in helping to support that at all. Thank you.
Mr. Nanservis?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Several things. I wanted to just point out, I believe March 7th, we have a joint meeting with the school board and the assembly. That's our first meeting on the facilities planning committee. I think that's our first meeting that we've got scheduled, and it's right before our retreat, our joint meeting with the school board. Right before that, I think that's our first one for that committee so far. So that is coming up. Excuse me. I also wanted to reiterate what you said, Madam Mayor, about the presentation, the housing presentation at DZ School. You were there. I was there. Ms. Gladyszewski was there. I believe Ms. Trobe was there as well. You were not there? Mr. Jones was there. Okay. There was one more. I knew there was one more that was there. And that what the kids, they gave probably 8-minute speeches on how they divided into groups and picked a spot around town where they would put their housing first place, why they would put it there, how they would fund it, and a real skeleton, bare skeleton on how they would, how do I want to say it, their rules of procedure or something like that, what would qualify to get you in there and things that you would have to do to stay in there. But it was actually very interesting in what they came up with. And it was fun to listen to, and it was a lot of fun. They brought all the kids in, all the kids from that grade in, and the whole library was full. It was very fun to do that. And lastly, I just wanted to congratulate the high school hockey team. As you know, I'm very entrenched and embedded in the hockey group around town and work with those kids on a regular basis. I think we've had a high school hockey team for 10 years, and this is the first time that they have gotten out of regionals and gotten to the state tournament, and I wanted to give them a shout-out for that. I'm very proud of them. They are a classy act. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe Mr. Keel was next, and then
thank you, Madam Mayor. A few things. I want to actually start out by applauding the Juneau League of Women Voters, which has taken it upon themselves, its members, to bring, I think now, every eighth grader in the CBJ through the state capitol building during the legislative session to show them floor sessions and have them meet with their elected officials in the, oh, word, heavens, 16, 17, 18 years I've been in the Capitol building, I've never seen an effort like that. And that many eighth graders can be a little chaotic, even though they did take it in phases, and they did a remarkable job of bringing them through and showing them their state government in action. And it's just an incredible volunteer effort by the league in partnership with the school district. Want to remind Assembly members that the Alaska Municipal League's winter meeting is this coming week. I think we start off with a little board meeting, and then Tuesday and Wednesday, the 16th and 17th, are the heart of the AML board meeting. I know a number of us, I think, have registered. Ms. Sika is nodding that I'm correct about that. and so I encourage everyone to participate if you can. Also want to flag on Tuesday the 16th at noon, there is the annual 1 Billion Rising event. It's the largest rally, largest demonstration event against violence towards women and girls, and it happens all over the world on the same day. And so that's an amazing and inspiring event if you've never been. I encourage everyone to join us there. I also want to give, interesting that Mr. Borg is here, a shout out to Docks and Harbors. I happened to attend the Territorial Sportsmen's annual meeting, not the big banquet, you haven't missed it, maybe too late to buy a ticket, but their annual meeting on the 4th. And they just had happened to ask, because they are very interested in Juneau's boat harbors and what's going on. They use them a lot. They'd asked somebody from Docks and Harbors to come and make a presentation. And I got a better rundown about what Docks and Harbors been up to lately from that very short presentation than I think I've ever gotten from our liaison comments. No offense. No offense meant. Well, look, let's just say that never at this assembly table did I hear such an amusing story about a 24-inch pile being driven, a 5-gallon bucket, and a seagull. So it's a remarkable story, and you should get with Docks and Harbors staff to hear it. I did have one question for staff, and may not be an answer tonight, may need to have an answer come back. We have been getting at the assembly some consternation from some seniors who are, when they use their sales tax card to buy groceries, which are still tax-exempt for seniors, at some stores, they're having to sort out their exempt from non-exempt goods, and at other stores, they're not. And, of course, as we went through the extensive process of figuring out what to do with the senior sales tax exemption, I know that staff worked extensively with the managers of the stores, and it was their understanding and our understanding that was not going to be necessary. It's part of why we structured things the way we did. And so I wonder if we could hear back at some later date about what the status is of making that card as easy to use as we understood it would be, and what our options are in terms of working with those retailers who haven't seemed to make the transition yet.
So I can give you a little update. I received an update from Clinton Singletary, our sales tax administrator, and he did check with both Safeway and Fred Meyers. And the Safeway manager stated they had no issues or troubles and was surprised how well it had been going since the exemption change happened. Regarding the future, the change for the point of sale system change, he said it's very low on their priority list right now because they're doing the merger of the Safeways with downtown and in the valley, and so it will happen, but it will be Safeway mergers, not downtown valley, just Safeway mergers. Sorry. But he said it will be happening, it just will take a while to do. Fred Meyer's manager explained that the biggest issue is when seniors first encounter having to divide their purchases. He stated that seniors, if they ended up needing assistance, they would help them. And he seemed that, according to him, he said that it's going much better. Seniors are becoming more comfortable with it. They know what needs to be separated. And he said that they've seen some complaints, but overall he said there's been no major problems and the number of complaints was small. They generally have more staff available if things start to get backed up. He had not heard of an update of when their change to the point of service system would be happening either for that exemption. And in the sales tax, they also said that they've received very few complaints about the sales tax changes, senior sales tax changes, and that they have been directing people to the webpage that outlines things, and they feel like the people that have called them, they've been able to explain the process, and they seem satisfied. Clinton said that he doesn't see anything that we can do to force them to change their point of sales piece. It will happen when it happens, and that he doesn't know that there's anything that we can do to push that to get them to change their system. I'm happy to follow up with additional questions if you have them for him.
I could add to that a little bit. At Fred Meyer's, it's not only do they need them separated, but you have to pay for them separately. And Costco seems to have a subtotal, and then they can go on. So you don't have to do that. But you still have to separate, but you don't have to pay twice. And I was told that very much like what you were told, that when Clinton and they checked into this, mm-hmm. they were told it would be done. Mm-hmm. It just didn't get done, and they thought it would be done by January 1st. I thought it was already done, but it wasn't. And they're just now not getting around to it as mm-hmm. fast as we hoped they would. So, Ms. Kolachewski?
Just to clarify, Fred Meyer thought it would be done too. In other words, we didn't get a miscommunication. No. They thought it would be done, but it's not done.
No, they thought
the representations were made to us that it was going to happen.
You mean maybe their corporate office or something? Yeah. They just told our staff it should be done in January, whether or not they...
Okay.
I don't know. But it isn't done, so it's a little bit
but
of a...
But they're working on it.
I think it's very awkward for the checkout people. It's really hard. Thank you. Let's see. Ms. Kolachewski, Ms. Troll, Mr. Jones.
Thank you. I was going to ask that sales tax question, so that's great. And then the only other comment I had was I got to go to the Project Homeless Connect last week, or January 26th, so thanks to the Juneau Coalition on Homelessness for organizing that. It's a great event. You know, there were haircuts there. You get your birth certificate, you get some socks, and you can register for all kinds of things, so you don't have to go from service provider to service provider. It's all in one room, and people seem to be having a great time, so that was really nice to see. Thanks to them for organizing that, and there was food, too.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have a couple of comments to make, but I'd like to circle back around and just address the sales tax thing. I think it might be appropriate for us to send a letter to our major food retailers and encourage them to move as quickly as possible on the point of sale service. I think we can acknowledge the changes that they're making, and they're working with us. But in order for this sales tax revision to work, we, as best as possible, it needs to be changed at the point of sale service. So I think just a letter encouraging them to move in that direction would be appropriate.
Thank you. Mr. Jones?
But I have more.
Oh,
I mean, so
me,
that's just on the, sorry. And while we're on the senior issue and things, there's been some emails flying around that certain seniors think that we're going to meddle with the senior property tax exemption. And I just would like to make it clear to anybody listening or to the media that this assembly has not entertained any discussions to do away with the senior property tax exemption. And that's on nobody's immediate agenda that I know of. And I want to give an appreciation to the staff for doing their evaluation on the use of the project labor agreements as to their suitability for the Seawalk and the Capital Transit. I'm glad to see that we are implementing our policy to move forward with project labor agreements. So thank you for that. At some time later, I would appreciate an update on where we are with the JAC lease arrangements. I, too, have been participating in the Innovation Summit, plan to go tomorrow. It was a very enlightening talk by the main speaker. One of the most important takeaways that I got is we don't want to just have Walmart turn into another large box store. That we would gain a lot more community well-being and more spending in our community if we actually looked at some alternative uses for that site rather than just trying to promote and find another box store owner. I approached the main speaker, Mr. Michael Schumann, and he's going to send me some examples of other communities that have dealt with abandoned Walmarts and how they've converted them into local mercantiles. You know, we can think about it as a daycare center. There's lots of other potential ideas out there. And I think it might be appropriate for the community to begin brainstorming some initiatives. Anyway, it was just a very enlightening talk. And I think that is it, Madam Mayor, for my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jones?
Nothing.
Is there anyone else? Okay. Is there anyone in the public who would like to address the assembly during public comment time? Okay. Thank you. There's no executive session. Is there anything else to come before this meeting?
No, thank you.
Oh, good. We are adjourned.